Pashas Mishpatim, dedicated by the family of our dear friend and colleague David Wicks, Zichrono Livracha, in advance of the second Yahrzeit. The Pasha Mishpatim, this week's Pasha, comes in between the Parsha of Yitro, which is the Parsha of Matan Torah, and ends, the Parsha of Mishpatim, ends with the story of Moshe Rabbeinu going up on Har Sinai to get the Torah. In other words, you have to remember that the Parsha of Yitro, everybody was the recipient of something of the Torah. And that something was Aseret HaDibrot. In fact, Chazal say that Bnei Yisrael did not hear all of the Aseret HaDibrot when Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain, but he only heard two of the Dibrot. They heard two of the Dibrot. The rest of the Dibrot they learned from Moshe Rabbeinu when he came down from Har Sinai. And then, shortly thereafter, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai again to get the entire Torah. But this is like a little bit confusing. Actually, getting the Torah is not the same as teaching the Torah. It was while Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights, and I guess he learned the entire Torah, but we don't know what that is. Right, the Ramban states categorically in his introduction to this commentary on the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai also received not only the Torah Sheval Peh of the Nigle, of the obvious Torah, the Torah that we learn, but he also received the Torah Sheval Peh of the Nistar. And by the Nistar he refers to Kabbalah. That there was a Kabbalah, a Torah of Kabbalah, which was hidden. Hidden meaning that it did not become the property of the general populace, but it was the property of those who were invested in that kind of learning. So according to the Ramban, when Moshe Rabbeinu was at Har Sinai, he received the Torah Sheval Peh of the Nigle. Now, what does Torah Sheval Peh of the Nigle mean? Well, there's always a Torah Sheval Peh, right? I mean, if you've ever tried to read a text in a foreign language, in another language, other language that you don't know, by looking up all the words in the dictionary, you would find that you basically wouldn't understand it when you were finished. It was understanding is a little more difficult than just translating words. So understanding is Torah Sheval Peh. It's the way you get into it. It's the way you learn it. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu eventually had to teach Bnei Yisrael. That's the tradition. That Moshe Rabbeinu was a teacher. He didn't just get the Torah in heaven and give it out in paper black version, you know, to all the Jews. He had to teach it to them because he was the only one who really understood it. Even though everybody understood Hebrew, I guess. I mean, in Mitzrayim they spoke, Chazal said they continued to speak Hebrew, which actually makes sense. I mean, to me, anyway, it makes sense that they continued to, that the last bastion of separateness is the language you brought from home. And so Bnei Yisrael, who were able to stick together because they lived in the land of Goshen, Chazal said that they spoke Hebrew. It makes sense to say that they spoke Hebrew. So I'm telling you all of this because you have to understand that Bnei Yisrael kept getting into the Torah in these parashiyot. They keep learning more about the Torah as you go along. Because in order to receive the Torah, and I think I pointed this out on more than one occasion, in order to receive the Torah, you had to know the Torah. You can't receive something that's a mystery to you. I mean, you can't receive the Torah written in a language that you don't understand. And you can't receive the Torah in a language that you do understand if you don't understand it. So the parasha of Mishpatim, now we say it sort of stands in between the Aseret HaDibrot parasha, which is Yitro, and the receiving the 40 days and 40 nights receiving the Torah on Har Sinai by Moshe Rabbeinu, which is at the end of the parasha of Mishpatim. Okay, you got it? So in between these two things, the Matan Torah of the parasha of Yitro and the Matan Torah of the parasha of Mishpatim is the parasha of Mishpatim. And what is the parasha of Mishpatim? It's a collection of laws. On odd topics. Odd meaning, I mean by that, that they don't necessarily have anything to do with each other, these odd topics, but they generally have a lot to do with Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Generally. They have to do with Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. They are halachot that are connected to human interactions. Now, in general, if you ask me why those parashiyot are there, I would say because you had to know the Torah in order to receive the Torah. In other words, you didn't have to know the Torah to receive the first two dibrot, I am the Lord your God and you should not make another God. I think that they understood without special preparation because they lived in that world. That was the world of Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov. It was the world they lived in, so that it was sort of like validated. There was a validation of something that they already knew. But the halachot in Mishpatim, I'm not sure they knew. I'm not sure they knew them at all. For example, the laws of Eved Ivri, right? Who said they knew those laws before they were taught by Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu, in between Yitro and the end of Mishpatim, teaches them Mishpatim. And the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu teaches them Mishpatim is in order that they should be able to say, yes, we know the Torah, we want the Torah. Right, which they said in that special way, Na'aseh v'nishma. Na'aseh v'nishma means we'll do what the Torah wants us to do, even if we don't know what it is yet. Right, Na'aseh, we will do it. V'nishma, and we'll hear. We are open to the idea that there are more directives that we don't yet know about. That's what B'nai Yisrael said to Moshe Rabbeinu. So this being said, there is one question that we have not answered about the parasha of Mishpatim, and that is, why these specific mitzvot? Why is this the information that was deemed so important for B'nai Yisrael that it make them ready to accept the Torah? Okay? Now, as a footnote, I would add that at the end of the parasha of Bishalach, Shmos Va'era Bo Bishalach, right? Shmos and Va'era, about getting ready for Yitziat Mitzrayim. Bo, more makot. Bishalach, they're running out of Eretz Mitzrayim. Shmos Va'era Bo Bishalach. Bishalach is the parasha when they leave Mitzrayim, Shirat Hayam, and it's the parasha in which it says, Sham Sam Lo, Choku Mishpat Visham Nisao, that already Chazal said that there was sort of like, there was some halachot that were taught to B'nai Yisrael on the way, before they came to Har Sinai. The other thing I want you to know is, or to remember, that in the parashat B'shalach, you have parashat Aman. What is parashat Aman? I mean, I know it's the parasha about the man, but what is parashat Aman? It's about Shabbat. Now, according to about Shabbat, because you have to collect twice as much on Friday, and not collect anything on Shabbat. And as you know, it was very hard to overcome the desire, right, to hoard food. I mean, everybody, all Jews are hoarders. Even those Jews, they didn't believe Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, look, you take twice as much on Friday, don't worry, there'll be enough, and you won't have to collect on Shabbat. And they found that difficult. They say, okay, we'll take twice as much, but what if we take three times as much? I mean, what terrible thing could happen? What terrible thing could happen to us? So they didn't understand why. But that's the story of Shabbat, right? That's the story about Shabbat. What is Shabbat? What is Shabbat? It's the day on which we commemorate, or we kind of declare, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Now, even though in Bereshit it already says that God created the world, and that we had no idea how to commemorate it, because there's nothing we could do. There's no way that we could possibly imitate God. I mean, usually when you have the memory of something, you try to imitate whatever it was that happened. But there was no way for us to do that until the man came along. So the man was, God said to Bnei Yisrael, this is how you keep Shabbat. So Bnei Yisrael says, but this has nothing to do with creation. So God said, doesn't matter. This is it. This is how you declare your allegiance to the God who created the world. That's how you do it. You cook on Friday and you eat on Shabbos. Now, could we come up with that kind of thing on our own? Certainly not. We would never be able to do that. There would no way that any person with any sort of reasonable outlook on things, charged with the question of how are we going to commemorate our allegiance to God, there's no way that he would say cook on Friday and and eat on Shabbos. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, this is how you commemorate Shabbos, that's fine. So that the need that Bnei Yisrael, according to the Chumash, when you look at the Chumash in order, where the Chumash says, in order for Bnei Yisrael to be the proper recipients of the Torah, they had to have Yitziat Mitzrayim, for whatever reason, we've talked about that. But they also had to know Torah, something. They had to know something in the Torah to be able to say, okay, we accept the Torah, the part that we know and the part that we don't know. If you know something, you can assume that you deem it worthy. I guess you could assume that what you don't know is also worthy. So that's what they said. They said, Naseh v'nishma, meaning we know enough of the Torah to be able to accept whatever you bring us, Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's one thing that they had to be at Har Sinai. But the other thing they had to be was they had to be able to express their religious devotion, the religious devotion they learned from Avraham Avinu, that God alone was the God who created the universe and who had promised Bnei Yisrael these two great promises, Eretz Canaan, and the tremendous zera, right? Seeds, a tremendous seed that would be come out of them eventually. And so they needed Shabbos. They had to go to Har Sinai. I'm telling you the story in the Chumash. I'm just telling you the story. It's like an art scroll story. Except I'll tell a joke here and there. Art scroll, there are no jokes. They had to have Shabbos in order to. They had to stand before God. So standing before God, they had to know something about God. They had to be able to express that something about God that they knew, which was that God created the world and that God was the unique God, and that's what Shabbos is about. That's what they did on Shabbos. And that enabled them. It enabled them to prepare themselves to coming to Har Sinai. So they had Shabbos, they had Torah, right? And they had a little more Torah that they learned before, Shabbos, Lo Chok Mishpat. They had Shabbos, they had Torah, and they were ready to accept the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down from Har Sinai after 40 days and 40 nights. And this could be, and this included, certainly included, according to Chazal, the Torah Shebaal Peh. By Torah Shebaal Peh, I always thought it meant the meaning of the pasuk. The meaning of the pasuk, that when you learn from a teacher, where you learn from a teacher, even though you're all speaking the same language, you have the impression sometimes, or often, that even on the most elementary level, that the teacher understands the text a lot better. It's always true that the teacher probably knows things about the text that you don't know, because that's the way of the world. Like, you go at it for a long time, you know all kinds of things. But the teacher, if he's a good teacher, or she's a good teacher, he reads better. You know, you ever hear that idea? Like, he really reads really, really well. Really well. That's always a problem in learning Gemara. Only problem in learning Gemara, there are a lot of people who know what it's about, but they have trouble reading it really well. They don't get much out of the words. But, you know, maybe it's better today. Art Scroll and Koran, you know, they actually tell you what the words mean, which is good. I mean, I think it's good if you have the patience and the self-discipline to go through it with those aids. So the end. What I'm saying now is, all we have left to decide, to figure out, is why the Torah of Mishpatim was chosen to be the Torah that B'nai Yisrael would have in hand when Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah at Har Sinai. Right? There's a series of psukim. So we're going to take a particular topic. And that topic is Ayin Tachat Ayin. That's the topic. Right? Ayin Tachat Ayin. So, the pasuk says, I'm reading from the sheet now, V'chi yinatzu anashim. Two men have a kind of a dispute, I guess. V'nakfu isha hara, and they accidentally, I guess, beat up on a pregnant woman, v'yatzu yiladea, and her, I don't know, whatever comes out, the fetuses or childbirth. V'lo ya'ason, right? V'lo ya'ason, the pasuk says, there's no great tragedy. Anoshi anesh, the guy who did it should be punished. Anoshi anesh, you know, in Hebrew, very often there is this duplicated use of a verb, right? Which, when I was a kid, they told me that's to have influence. That's a What's the word?
Emphasis.
Oh, emphasis. Yeah, emphasis. I'm a big opponent of the word emphasis. I always felt that it really meant I don't know. I still feel the same way. I mean, but then when I came across in the Torah, it says very often, not very often, but often enough, mot yumat. You should die verily. Verily is also a good word. Only English understand what that means. But so Americans use it when they want to sound clever. Verily. You imagine there's a difference between verily dead and being just dead? Or sakol yisakel. There's a difference between having stones rain down upon you and having them verily rain down upon you. I can't imagine that there's much of a difference. Wow, that's terrific.
Louis Armstrong.
That was his last time he did it. That's pretty good. Okay. Anoshi Anesh, whatever that means, he'll be punished. Kashe Yishit Allah Bala Isha. Kashe Yishit Allah Bala Isha. And Natan Beplilim. Okay, the Natan Beplilim, if you look at the Rashi, Rashi says, Al pi hadayanim. Plilim, it's like, that's what Rashi says. He doesn't quote a source or something. So, if you go back to the beginning of the Rashi, ki yinatzu anashim, you see Rashi says, zem ze, v'nitkaven lahakot et chaveiro v'ika et aisha. So there's a question: whenever you do damage, did you intend to do the damage that was done? Or was it done inadvertently? Right? Inadvertently. So if you skip down to Anoshe Anesh, L'shalem d'mei v'ladot la'ba'al, Shaminoto kamat haita ra'uya limacher bashuk, la'alot b'dameha b'shvil haryona. So again, the Rashi here points to something which in the Gemara is very common. How do you know How do you know damage? How do you evaluate damage? So the Gemara says, let's say you damaged a person. You did it to a person, you did it to a woman, you did it to the children. How do you damage it? Well, you go to the shuk where they buy slaves. And you say, how much is this person, a man, a woman, a pregnant woman, how much are they worth on the market if somebody wanted to buy them as a slave? And how much are they worth now, now that they are damaged? And that differential is called nezek. That differential is called nezek, and that's the payment that you have to make when you do something wrong. So, if you go to the next pasuk says, "Ibasod yevel etata nefesh tachat nefesh." So there is a regulation here, nefesh tachat nefesh, nefesh tachat nefesh. You look at Rashi. Nefesh tachat nefesh is a dead person for a dead person. If you kill somebody, so you get killed. That's nefesh tachat nefesh. One in exchange for the other. Rashi says, Rabotenu chokim badavar. Rabotenu chokim badavar. Now this is not a very surprising thing in the Gemara. Anybody who learns Gemara knows that it is replete with differences of opinion. There's almost no issue in the Gemara that is not contested. So when Rashi says Rabotenu chokim badavar, he means perfectly normal, perfectly reasonable. Yeshomrim nefesh mesh nefesh mamash. There are those who say that the pasuk nefesh tachat nefesh means you take a soul for a soul, you take a person for a person. He killed somebody, you kill him. V'yeshomrim mamon, v'yeshomrim mamon, yeshomrim mamon. Avolo nefesh mamash. So there's a Torah shebichtav and a Torah shebal peh. A Torah shebichtav and a Torah shebal peh. The Torah shebichtav is nefesh tachat nefesh. According to that opinion, there's a Torah shebichtav. And the Torah shebal peh is also nefesh tachat nefesh. But according to the other opinion, the Torah shebichtav is nefesh tachat nefesh, but the Torah shebal peh is mamon. So of course the question is, well, why doesn't the Torah just tell you mamon according to that opinion? Why does the Torah say pay money tachat nefesh? Why does the Torah say nefesh tachat nefesh, and I have to figure out that the Torah doesn't mean it? What's the point? What's the point of doing all of that? So if you look at the Ibn Ezra, right next to the Rashi, if we look at the Ibn Ezra, the Ibn Ezra says, "Ayin, Omar of Saadia. Of Saadia was a gaon. A gaon this means Rashi Shiva in Babel in the 9th and 10th centuries. He was an outstanding scholar." People say that. Is that whether I mean? I don't mean that I know that he was an outstanding scholar. What I mean is only that his literary work is still used today and is learned today very, very seriously. So I assume that he was pretty serious. He, Rav Saadia Gaon, serious person, quoted by all those who followed him. So he says, listen, he says, "Lo nuchal lefaresh zeh pasuk kimashma'o." We can't possibly explain this pasuk, which is ayin tachat ayin. I didn't read the pasuk, right? Pasuk of Dalit. Look at the pasuk quickly. Ayin tachat ayin, chain tachat chain, yad tachat yad, drago tachat drago. You see that? I mean, so that pasuk is a difficult pasuk because we don't know why we need so many examples. We don't know exactly what the pasuk means according to the Gemara. So listen to what the Rav Saadia says. Lo nuchal lefaresh pasuk kimashmo. It's impossible to explain the pasuk literally. You can't. Ki im adam hika ein chavero. If a person damages his fellow's eye, right? Visara shlishit or enav, and he loses a third of his sight. You go to a doctor, and the doctor says, "Oh, a third of his sight is gone." Ech yitachein sheyukeh makaka zot belito sefer do migrat. So how is it possible that we could punish the person who did it in the exact same way that he created the damage? So if the damage he created was that he caused Reuven, caused Shimon to lose a third of his sight, the Besdin would have to come and take Reuven and say, we're now going to remove a third of your sight. So Rav Sadia Gaon says, impossible. Impossible. So what is it that Rav Sadia Gaon is helping us with? What is he helping us with?
It has to be metaphorical.
It has to be what?
Metaphorical.
Well, it's not metaphorical. It's literal. This is what Rav Sadia Gaon says. He says, the person who says in the Gemara that ayin tachat ayin means mamash, him I don't understand. I don't understand that at all because you can't do it. So the word who says ayin tachat ayin is mamon, him I understand. I understand because you can't actually do to the other person what he did. So we're left with the question, of course, left with the question, so why does the Torah say ayin tachat ayin? I mean, certainly Rav Sadia, it's Rav Sadia's right, and the Gemara indicates this, and all the other Mefarshim say the same thing. How could you possibly imagine? How could you possibly imagine that you could do to him what he did to the other guy? How can you imagine? Also, how about a case like this? A person is blind in one eye. A person is blind in one eye. And then the chovel, the damager, knocks out the other guy, the other eye. And now he's totally blind. The Torah says, ayin tachat ayin. So if I knock out one eye of the guy who did it, he's not going to be blind. So it's sort of like impossible. It's impossible to do ayin tachat ayin. And therefore, Rav Sadia Gaon says, that clearly the only solution to the problem is mamon. It's got to be. It's got to be mamon. Now look, right, ulai, up at the end of the third line in the Ibn Ezra. Ulai yachshich or eino kulo, maybe you won't be able to see anything at all. The yoter kasheh hakviya vapetza vachabura. There is in the third pasuk kafe. You see pasuk kafe. It says kviya takviya, which is usually interpreted as a burn. Petza tachat patza, some kind of a wound, and chabura tachat chabura, another kind of a wound. Right? These are so they're all included. They're all included in this statement that the Torah makes. And then he goes on and says, Yoter kasheh kviya, vapetza, vachabura, ki mayu b'makom misukan, ulay yamut, if they were in, like usually, if you get a petza, so it heals itself, right? Eventually it'll heal, even if it's a bad petza. He says, but if it's in a bad place, b'makom misukan, ulay yamut, maybe he'll get infected, the petza will get infected, he'll get something. The wrong ve'ena dats sovelet, and there's no way to understand how you could do petza tagat petza. Omar lo ben zuta, and then he reports a conversation between Rav Sadia Gaon and ben zuta. Ben zuta was one of his the people around in Bavel. V'alo katub b'makom acher, and then he goes on to. Okay, then he goes on to go through this discussion, which is very interesting, and you should look at it. But I want to concentrate on that other question. If, in fact, you can't do ayin tachat ayin, and petza tachat petza, kviya kaku kviya, and chabura kaku chabura, you can't do it. Because you can't do it. So you have to do something else. And even though mamon is never perfect, we admit that. The payment of mamon is not going to be perfect because, okay, he's named to the slave market and he's worth 100 before and he's worth 80 now, so you know he's lost 20, so that's the nezek. Oh, plenty of problems with that kind of system. But we haven't got a better idea. The question is, why did the Torah say ayin tachat ayin? Why did the Torah say ayin tachat ayin? So you have to say that there is this principle that Chazal understood from the time of creation, that was somehow in the world. And that principle is called Midah Keneged Midah. That principle is called Midah Keneged Midah. That somehow there's parity between what happens on earth and what happens in heaven. That somehow that somehow HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses this principle in order to punish us, in order to give us reward, in order to straighten things out. This is a principle that we, so that in effect what these psukim are saying, what these psukim are saying, I mean, this is what you have to say according to this question that I'm asking. The question I'm asking, why write Ayin Tachadayim? Why write Ayin Tachadayim? It's to teach us. Here the people are ready to get the Torah, right? I mean, I just don't want to forget the line of reasoning here, right? There's Yitro, and that's Aret Dibro, and then there's Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai, and he's receiving the Torah, the Torah Shemishtav, and the Torah Shemal Peh. And the Torah Shemal Peh is the interpretation of the correct interpretation of Torah Shemishtav. That's what's going on. And then B'nai Israel are taught something here in this parasha of great significance. And that is, you can't always do midah keneged midah. You know what you want to do. What is it you want to do? You want to do Ayin Tachadayim. Because that's a principle that underlies the working of the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. It's like, it's there someplace. It's there someplace. Mido keneged mido. So you want to do mido keneged mido. You want to knock out the eye of the eye that was knocked out. The guy who knocked out the eye. You want to cut off his arm if he cut off somebody else's arm. You want to do that. That's the right thing to do. That's the fair thing to do. That's the ultimately objective thing to do. But you can't. We can't. We can't. There are limits. There are limits to our perception of reality, which prevent us from doing what we think we should be doing. So here's the Torah, which is about to be given to B'nai Yisrael. And what do they say? What does the Torah say in these psukim? What does the Torah say in these psukim? Ayin tachadayin. Mamon. Ayin tachadayin means midah keneged midah, which is what it should be. But you understand, as Rav Sadia Gaon explained, you can't do that. You can't do Ayin Tachadayin, because there are too many limits that are placed upon you, too many inabilities that you have to be able to do it in the way that is absolutely, absolutely perfect. And that does not deny the Tzelem Elokim of the other person. So if you look quickly at the Rambam, turn the page, you see the Rambam at the bottom, the Rambam there at the bottom. The Rambam says, Hilchot Chovel Umazik Perek Aleph. You see the Rambam, Hilchot Chovel Umazik Perek Aleph. We'll go quickly through these halachot. HaChovel v'chaviro chayav l'shalem lo chamisha dvarim. Nezik v'tzara v'ripui v'shevet u'boshet. This is the basic halacha of torts, that you have to pay five payments, right? Nezik, tzara, ripui, shevet u'boshet. Shevet is unemployment insurance, and boshet is embarrassment that you may have because of what happened to you. V'chamisha dvarim eilu kulam l'shtalmim min ha'yefei shevet u'chasav k'din kol ha'mizikin. You have to pay Maytav. You have to pay it with good stuff, good quality. Not enough to pay the amount, but you have to pay the amount in a negotiable form. And then he discusses. We'll go through it. Nezek Ketzad, Shem Kata Yad Chaveiro Raglo. If you cut off somebody's arm or leg, Ro'im Oto Ki Iluhu Eved Nimkar Bashuk. You take him. You say, how much would he have brought as a slave in the slave market? Kama haya yafeh, v'kama hu yafeh ata. How much was he worth then, and how much is he worth now? U'mishalem hapchat, shevchit midabah. But you pay the difference. So if he was worth 100, as if he would be sold as a slave, and now he's worth 80, so you pay 20. That's called nezek, etc. Gimel, halacha gimel. It doesn't mean that you have to damage him in the same way that he damaged somebody else. אלא שראוי לחסרו עבר או לחבול בו כמו שעשה, ולפיכך משלם נזיקין. But it just says that he should have been punished this way, but instead we're going to just pay money. והרי הוא אומר, etc. Right? דלת. וכן זה שנאמר בחובל בחברו מזיקו לא תחוס עיניו. עיניך שלא תחוס בתשלומים. And so you have to pay what he deserves to get paid, the Rambam says. And now we're up to halacha vav, which is where I wanted to be at the beginning, but we got there this way. Halacha vav, hilchot chovel umazik, the Rambam. Af al pi, shedvarim elu nir'im, me'inyan Torah shebichtav, kulan meforashin hein mepi Moshe, Mehar Sinai. Says, even though it may seem to you that the words of the Torah are perfectly clear and we should do what the Torah says, before Hashin Haim, they were further interpreted or explained Mipi Moshe Mehar Sinai Vikulan Halacha Lema'aseh Hein Biyadeinu. And they all turned out the way Moshe Rabbeinu taught it to us. That's the halacha. Uchezeh ra'u avoteinu danim bebeit dino shel Yehoshua. This is the way our forefathers received the pasuk, the information. Bebeit dino shel Yehoshua, bebeit dino shel Shmuel Haramati. Shmuel HaMati, Shmuel HaNavi, ובכל בית דין ובית דין שעמדו מימות משה ועד עכשיו. So the Rambam adds something that he doesn't usually do, an editorial comment in the Sefer Halakha called Mishneh Torah. And he says, yes, I know that that's what the Pasuk says, but you should know that every Beit Din from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun and Shmuel HaRamati until our own time all validated the fact that the real meaning of the Pasuk is Mamon. That the real meaning of the Pasuk is Mamon. And then he says something similar. If you look at this quote Guide for the Perplexed. If you look at the English text here, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom. No. You should look at it. You must not raise an objection from our practice of imposing a fine in such cases. So there are cases where even where somebody was killed. For we, in the Talmud, I have, however, an explanation for the interpretation given in the Talmud, but it will be communicated viva voce, if you know Italian, I guess. Injuries that cannot be reproduced exactly in another person are compensated for by payment. Only he should pay for the loss of his time. He should cause him to be thoroughly healed. So he says, he repeats the words of the Ibn Ezra. He repeats what the Ibn Ezra taught us, that since you can't do it, you pay money. Since you can't do it, you pay money. By paying money, it's only an approximation. But as the Rambam said, this is the way Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. This is what we are supposed to do. This is how we achieve the Midah Keneged Midah. So what I said was, just like Shabbos, so too Nezikin. Just like Shabbos. Just like Shabbos, we wouldn't know how to keep Shabbos if HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't tell us how to do it. How to keep Shabbos. It's the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Vayavarech, as Yom HaShabbos, Vayikadesh. Vayavarech, Vayikadesh. Rashi says, Berchobaman, Vekichobaman. So that Rashi says, the pshat in the Pasuk, it's like Rashi sitting there, you know, in the Beit HaTfutzot, you know, Rashi sitting there on that desk that he has, and he's saying, what are we going to do with this Pasuk? I mean, we don't see the Bercho and the Kidsho. So they were talking about it, and Rashi said, Bercho Baman, Kidsho Baman. That's what Rashi says. In Perek, the end of Perek, or the beginning of Perek Beis, in Bereshis. Bercho Baman, Kidsho Baman. That means these words that are so difficult for us to understand, these words. Which words? Bercho v'kitcho. I mean, we've got to look around, look for it. Where's the bercho, where's the kitcho? So the answer is that this was redesigned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu into man. And once it was into man, we understand what bercho is. Bercho is twice as much on a Friday, that's bracha. You get twice as much. Every day, there's only enough for one portion for everybody in the machaneh. Friday, there's enough for two portions, Friday and Shabbos, for everybody. So that's bercho b'man. And what's kitcho b'man? Kitcho b'man is Shabbos, no man. It's not there. You can look for it all you want, you're not going to find it. So this is something that the Torah taught us about Shabbos. You ought to keep Shabbos, Melechet HaMishkan. Melechet HaMishkan. You ought to keep Shabbos, you have to cook Friday. You have to worry about Borer. You have to worry about all the Melechot of Shabbos. What's that got to do with the Kodesh Baruch Hu making the world in 6 days and refraining on the second 7 days? Nothing, except that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. Now you want a second guess? You could try. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Shabbos for us is this. All of these things, Ksiva and Mechika and Binyan, all of those things make Shabbos. Who said so? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said so. Could we have said so? I don't think so. Nobody who would say such a thing? Who would say that you can play with Lego, you can't play with Lego? I mean, who would ever imagine that that is how you do with Shabbos? But I guess it does. I guess it does. It has to do with what we call keeping Shabbos. Right? Making sure everybody knows that we're keeping Shabbos. The same thing is true about Ayin Tachat Ayin. You receive the Torah. So the Rambam says, you're receiving the Torah. You're about to receive the Torah tomorrow. What do you have to know about the Torah? You have to know that the Torah is what Moshe Rabbeinu tells you it is. That's what the Torah is. And if you have a contradiction between what Moshe Rabbeinu says and what it seems to say in the Torah, like Ayin Tagadayin versus Momon, it means that you have to take up the position of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what you have to know before you receive the Torah. If you don't know that, how are you going to receive the Torah? I mean, like, you got the whole thing wrong. You got the whole thing wrong. You read a pasuk, Ayin Tachat Ayin, you think it means you should knock out the guy's eye. Wrong. So that's what you had to know before you received the Torah. You had to know what the Torah was. And the Torah is in the interpretation of it. So why did the Torah write Ayin Tachat Ayin? And why is there a machloket in the Gemara, whether it's mamish or whether it's momon? Because Ayin Tachat Ayin also means something. It means midah keneged midah. It's the level of response that we cannot attain. But that doesn't mean that level of response doesn't exist. The level of response that we cannot attain is midah keneged midah, that somehow we do to him what he wanted to do. Really. We really do it, but we can't do it. That's the Rav Sadia Gaon and the Rabbi of the Mor Nebuchim. They all agree that we can't do it. Yes? Wait a second. Okay.
You actually gave two reasons why we can't do Ayin Tachat Ayin and keep Shittal. The second reason was that it might affect the Tzelem Elokim and the person you do it to. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, because let's say you have permission to do to him what he did to the other guy. But if you do something worse, so you're denying the Tzelem Elokim. You can't just do it. You have to have permission to do it. You have to have permission. Nefesh tachat nefesh doesn't mean you can go around killing anybody you want. But in certain, which is why, let's say nefesh tachat nefesh, that's what it says in the pasuk. Right? Now I've in the past been accused of being a left winger. And that's because I am. But I don't want to talk about it. However, I would say that what the Torah wants you to do Where Torah wants you to do is do what you have to do and yet respect the humanity of the other person. Now that's a very difficult thing. That's a very difficult thing. So it got morphed into a payment. Because that I can do. I can do it. It may hurt the person who has to pay, but he doesn't lose his dignity. He doesn't lose his humanity. I'm not just killing him because he did something I don't like. Which we see in the world today is, it happens sometimes, let's say. I'm not going to...
But more important, the second part, I understand what you said, that the second part is also important, namely that the reason it has to say nefesh tachat nefesh, or shin tachat nefesh, is because the principle has to be stated, because the principle is important, even if we can't live that way, we have to have it.
Yeah, it could also be, yes.
Because you could have said, maman,
true, 100%, but it's also because all punishment is based on some theoretical consideration, right? Okay, it's too much to get into. But I think that this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu is coming to you with the Torah, that you have to understand that there's always Rashi. It's got to be Rashi. I mean, Rashi was invented by Moshe Rabbeinu. It's only, and Rashi himself only came along because there was a need. There was a need for Rashi. People did not understand the words properly. So they needed Rashi. So Rashi came along, and what Rashi did was actually integrate the tradition of interpretation in Chazal with the psukim. He didn't change the psukim. He didn't say there are new psukim that I want to write. He kept all the psukim intact, but he put in what we call Torah Sheba'al Peh. And Torah Sheba'al Peh is the interpretation of the Torah Shebichtav. It's not a story, or an agadah, or a saying, or anything of that kind. It is the real meaning of it. It's the real meaning of it. So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu had to prepare the day Yisrael to accept the Torah, but not just the Torah, but it had to be a function of Vayaminu Vashem of Moshe Avdo, that Moshe somehow interpreted in the most legitimate fashion what God meant to tell us. And even when it seemed that that interpretation contradicts the literal meaning of the text, so the interpretation stands. And we have to ask ourselves, what is the literal meaning? What does the literal text come to teach us? It's like the question is turned around. Okay, have a good Shabbos. The what?
The machlokes in the Gemara, and one opinion says nefesh is serious and literal, and the other one says mamon. How can that be a machlokes that happens if throughout the history beforehand in every Beis Din they had ruled that nefesh was? Is it a purely theoretical argument?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe it's the Gemara gives us the impression that it's a machlokes, but maybe it's not. Maybe just two opinions about the same thing, both of which are legitimate and accepted by both sides. In fact, a lot of Gemara learning goes in that direction, to try to show that the machlokes can be very limited, so that each position would be more accepting of the other.
We have instances where
Moshe doesn't do the right thing, right? Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Are you saying, though, that that we have to accept that right or wrong, his Torah interpretation, is what we have to accept?
Moshe Rabbeinu's interpretation.
Yes, because
yeah, that's. I think that was the idea.
Because we know that he made certain mistakes in his life.
Like what? What sort of mistakes
well,
do you
mean? He hit the rock, right?
He what?
He hit the rock.
Oh. Yes, you could make a leader could make a mistake,
yes,
about the hierarchy at the moment. Like what do you benefit from? Do you benefit from showing the people that you have devotion to the literal position, or can you kind of move away and bring them back, like the Horacha of Eliyahu Navi? This is always a problem of leadership. right? That sometimes the leader has to seem to deviate from the principles and try to do something else. But I don't think that Moshe Rabbeinu deviated from, I mean, this was a leadership question that you, what you're talking about, hitting the rock or speaking to the rock.
Well, that's the easiest example. I mean, he also, the issue with Tzipora and
Okay, so he made a mistake, but it wasn't about the Torah. It was about whether he should do this first or that first. Everybody can make a mistake. But only Moshe Rabbeinu could receive the fixed text, because everybody else would only get the text of words. Moshe Rabbeinu would get the text of interpretations.
So it's really what you're saying is that what you once called, like, he's reading down Torah with a big tick, right?
Once in class, long ago, you talked about that, right?
Torah with a big T and Torah with a small T in a way. We're not talking only about scrolls, but he's reading down the whole Torah tradition here. That's what you mean, right?
I guess. I mean, I'm prepared to agree with you, but not too loud.
Well, I'm just quoting you, so it's easier to agree with me.
You should never do that.